What's up, guys? I'm Jared Lopes, and you're listening to the Dad Tired Podcast, where I'm helping everyday families learn how to follow Jesus in everyday life. Hey guys, Jared Lopes with you here back on the Dad Tired Podcast. It's good to be with you again. I'm actually recording this podcast in my car as I drive from one place to another. Just trying to kill two birds with one stone. And so I apologize if the audio isn't very good. And although some of the best conversations I've ever had with guys have been in the car as I'm driving. So hopefully this will be a good conversation. If you're new to Dad Tired, Dad Tired is essentially a group of guys from around the world who are taking their faith, their family, and their marriage very seriously. And we'd love to have you be part of that group. The best way to do that is to go to dadtired.com and click the community tab, and that will link you over to a free closed group on Facebook where there are about 1,500 guys from around the world who are just taking this stuff really seriously. So go to dadtired.com, click the community tab, and get connected to with what we got going on over there. Every week I tell you guys, if you enjoy the podcast, like if this is something that's helpful for you, one of the best ways that you can help me and Dad Tired Ministry is to leave a review, which is always, that's still true. But this week I'm going to ask for a little bit of a unique special favor, and that is I'd like to start speaking more. I'd like to start being around other men and women and families who just need to hear more gospel-centered stuff. So if the Dad Tired Podcast has been helpful for you and you get a lot out of it and think maybe others might get a lot out of it, I would love for you to pass on Dad Tired to maybe someone in your church, or if you know somebody putting on a conference, a camp, something like that. I would love to be considered to partner with them and or maybe partner with you if you're doing something like that and just reaching more and more people with the gospel, the good news of Jesus. So if you've got a church that you're part of or a conference or a camp or something like that, I'd love to come hang out with you and meet you and talk Jesus stuff. So you can get a hold of me by going to hello@dadtired.com. That's the best email to reach me, hello@dadtired.com, or just click the speaking tab on the website, dadtired.com, the speaking tab. And that's a way that you can get connected with speaking engagements as well. So anyway, wanted to throw that out there. Surely you know somebody right now that you could call or text or email and say, hey, this is my friend Jared, even if we've never met. And just let them know how Dad Tired has been beneficial to you. And hopefully we can get some on the books. I told you guys last week that I'm kind of getting into this whole minimalism thing. And since last week, I've even gotten further into it. It's kind of an addicting thing, this whole minimalism thing. And the more stuff you get rid of, the more kind of clutter-free you start to make your life, the more you want it. And the more you realize how much your life is cluttered. Like if you've ever been around a friend and they say they're going to move and they say like, oh, but I don't have that much stuff, it shouldn't take us that long. Those are such famous last words. Like, I've been around so many guys, so many people that says, hey, can you come help me move? It should take us about an hour. I'll give you some pizza. And, you know, next scene, we're there for 3 days and we've got 16 U-Hauls trying to haul everything out. We just always have way more stuff than we anticipate. And that's kind of the idea behind the minimalism thing that I'm getting into is, you know, as far as stuff goes, we just have way more stuff, like actual physical stuff. We have a lot of it. But when you go past just your stuff, so you kind of start to declutter your house and get rid of all the stuff in your house, the physical stuff that you don't need or that doesn't bring you joy, then you start moving on to other things, like what emails are you subscribed to that you don't need or doesn't bring you joy, or what people in your life do you still have around, or friendships do you still have involved in that you just don't need or that aren't good for you and don't point you towards Jesus, or what things consume your... Sorry, I've got GPS like telling me where to go in my ear as I'm trying to talk to you. Man, she is obnoxious. Like what other things in your life are there that you just, you know, you don't need or aren't pointing to Jesus? It could be TV shows or music. It could be financial things that you're buying. Like, are you subscribed to things, cable, internet, other subscriptions that maybe are luxuries, but you just don't need them right now. All these things add noise to our life. And we have all kind of, like, this may sound silly, but I've lived in the same house for 3 years. And literally since the day we moved in, we've had this newspaper being delivered to our driveway. And every single week, every single Monday morning, I wake up, I see the newspaper, I pick it up and I walk it straight to the recycling. And it brings just the slightest amount of stress to me as I think, why in the world do you keep dropping this newspaper off? So yesterday I actually called to unsubscribe. I don't even know how I was subscribed to this. This is probably the person before me was. But just little stuff like that. Like every week we've got hundreds and hundreds of those kinds of things that are invading our lives that don't actually cause that much joy or point us to Jesus. And aren't even necessary. So it's not like a necessary thing that I have to have. They're just unnecessary stressors. And that's kind of the point of minimalism, is what are the unnecessary stressors that you continue to keep in your life that you can start to declutter and get rid of, whether that be friendships, bills, things you're spending money on, actual stuff in your home, whatever it is, what could you actually start to get rid of? So that being said, that's kind of what last week's podcast was about. That being said, I have tried to create space and margin in my life for the things that matter, mainly the voice of God, like getting rid of so much noise that I can have a little bit of more calm schedule and calm day so that I can just engage with my Father more, engage with the Holy Spirit. And like, God, what are you trying to teach me? What are you trying to say to me? What areas of my life still need to, what areas of junk need to continue to be exposed and surrender to you? What things do I need to repent of? What things do I need to be joyful for that I've been taking for granted? You know, things like that. So that's been a huge part of the decluttering process, is just allowing some space and time and less noise to actually hear from God. But it's also created more time for my friendships, for the people who really matter to me, and like my wife and my kids, and being fully present in the moment with them. It's been huge. I've been way more present with them than I've typically been in the last few years. And so since the last podcast and the last couple podcasts, I've had some close friends reach out to me and just want to get together. And I've reached out to a couple guys, and we've spent some time eating meals together and just talking about life and what it means to be husband and dad and all that good stuff. And one thing that keeps coming up, I've heard this a couple times this week, and I think it's in response to some things I've said in the podcast, the last few podcasts, but I've just been meeting with a lot of guys who really deal with shame, who are deeply struggling with like who they are and what they've done, or maybe what they haven't done, and as a result, feeling far from God as a result. And this is like, if you've listened to the podcast at all, you know I deal with deep senses of shame. Just like who I am at my core is junk and just not good and not worthy. And so that, you know, that's been a struggle of mine for years and years and years, and been talking to a lot of other guys who feel that way too. And it's just like, it's literally what the very first humans were experiencing. Like back in the garden, everything was perfect. Relationship between Adam and Eve and humans was perfect between each other, but also relationship between humanity and God was perfect. There was no shame. They were comfortable to be around God and in the presence of God and to be near God. And then they sin. And the very first reaction, like I said last week, the first thing that they do is the same thing that my 5-year-old son does. He runs away and he hides. And that's what we do. We run away and we hide because we feel that sense of shame. Like, I can't be seen right now in my nakedness. I can't be seen in my brokenness and in the midst of my junk. And there was a couple nights ago where I was just having kind of a weird day and just kind of felt off and struggling with like shame and guilt and just like, man, I made some dumb decisions and like, I'm a hypocrite. Who am I? And all this kind of having a pity party for myself. And then I went and played some soccer with some friends later that night. And at the game, there was a bunch of fights. Like actually on team versus team fights, like physical altercations. And I just remember standing on the field and kind of watching this unfold and just had this overwhelming sense of like, geez, there's so much evil and junk. Like, we are grown men fighting, like physically fighting. We're all like big and out of shape and like, you know, pulling muscles. This has no value whatsoever. This little low competitive wreck city league team. We're not professionals here, and yet we're so serious about this stupid game. And I just thought, we have so much junk, like there's so much evil and pride welled in us. And so I just left there feeling like, God, I feel weird. I feel like I need to be close to you. And so I got home and my family was all asleep, and I just I got into my house and I laid on my living room floor. And I just tried to listen to God. I read some prayers and read some scripture and just tried to listen to what God was speaking to me. Like, God, what do you want to say to me as I'm trying to get rid of this noise? Like, what would you have for me? What word would you want to say to me? And I just felt like God was telling me, in kind of the midst of my feeling like junk and feeling like bouts of shame or guilt, this thought kept coming back over and over to me. I felt like the Lord was speaking to me, Jared, what is my reputation when I interact with people like you? So in my mind, like most of us, when we sin or when we fall short or when we feel guilty, we feel like we deserve, like God would treat us the way that we deserve, the way that we would treat ourselves or other people who have done something similar. But I felt like God was saying, Jared, what is my actual reputation? Not like fluffy, what'd you hear in a Christian song? Like, what'd you learn in Sunday school or any of that? But what is my actual reputation? What do I actually do when I encounter people who are sinful, who are like you, who do not do the right thing? And I just was flooded, like verse after verse, story after story of these encounters, that God had with people, or that Jesus had with people who were sinning. And it started all the way back in that very first story where man and woman had sinned and they were hiding in their shame. And God's first words to them, which always strikes me as amazing, he was walking with them in the garden, then they went away from him, they sin, and God is in the garden, and he doesn't say, he already knows, he knows everything. God doesn't say, what have you done? Where? What did you do? That wasn't his first question. His first question was, where are you? Where are you? It's a highly relational question. It's a question that gives this thought that, like, I'm more concerned that you're pulled away from me than I am with what just happened. Now, granted, what had just happened was huge. It was literally world-changing what they just did. It was a big deal, and God didn't overlook it. But at that moment, God's first words were still, where are you? That like father-son relationship, when my son runs away, the first thing I'm saying or should be saying is, son, where are you? You don't need to hide. Who told you you're naked? Like, why do you feel vulnerable? And so that's God's first reaction that we see in scriptures with people that fall short or who mess up or who sin against him. And then we see in the scriptures, like, I could go on and on and on with stories of how God reacts towards sinners. But like, I think about the woman in the well, where this woman just on a random day goes to the well to get some water. It'd be like us going to the grocery store, right? Just to get some things you need. And she happens to have this encounter with Jesus. And he starts asking her these crazy questions, like, Do you want better water, water that would make you never thirst again? And she's like, well, of course I do. You know, it'd be like at the grocery store, somebody saying, hey, do you want food? I can give you food that so you would never be hungry again. But yeah, what aisle is that on? Of course I want that kind of food. And he says, well, do you want water that would never make you thirst again? And she says, yes. And he says, I'm that water. I'm the living water. And this woman was known. She kind of had a promiscuous reputation. And Jesus shouldn't even be talking to her because she's a woman and they're not from the same like race or origin. And yet God's talking to her. He's engaging with her. And he doesn't just start calling her out on a sin, although he acknowledges he knows she has sin. But instead of just calling her out on her sin and condemning her, he says, listen, just come to me. Like, come towards me. I will give you water. I can be that water for you where you never thirst again. What God is really doing is he's not like just messing with their behavior or telling them, hey, you really need to change your behavior. He's saying your heart is like searching. Your heart is chasing after things that you think will satisfy you, and they're not. And so instead of going for all these things that you think will satisfy you, come to me. I'm the water that will actually satisfy your soul. Jesus has like this reputation of engaging people who are broken and messy and doing it in a way that he's offering himself, not change behavior, but he's offering himself. You look at Matthew, the tax collector. Right? Matthew is a known tax collector. He's not liked in his society. He's a sinner. He's probably a thief in many ways. He takes advantage of people as many tax collectors did. And Jesus says, hey, Matthew, come follow me. That was Jesus' words to him. It wasn't like, hey, go change your behavior. Jesus invited him into relationship. He didn't invite him into change behavior. He invited him in to relationship. And just later in that passage in Matthew 9, Jesus is hanging out with Matthew and all his sinner friends, and all the religious people get mad and they're like, what the heck? Why is this guy who claims to be God hanging out with all these sinners? And Jesus said, I didn't come for the healthy. I came for the sick. And so, I mean, I literally could go on and on. When you think about the woman caught in adultery, she's literally caught in a shameful, shameful act of sin. And they bring her out to say, we caught her. Like, let's stone her. Let's punish her for this shameful act of sin. And Jesus says, whoever, you know, wants to throw the first stone, go ahead. But whoever hasn't sinned, you know, if you haven't sinned, then you go ahead and throw the first stone. Like, Jesus is immediately saying, listen, you're all broken. You're all broken. And he tells the woman, go sin no more. Like, you're forgiven. Your sins are forgiven. And I mean, Jesus just has this reputation over and over and over again. When he interacts with people like me, broken, jacked up, messy people, he does not pour shame on them. Instead, he says, come follow me. Get closer to me. I'm the one that can satisfy your soul. He invites them into relationship. And eventually, Jesus says, you can pour all of that shame, all of that guilt, all of that heaviness on me. I'll take it for you so that we can be back in right relationship again, like it was back at the very beginning in the garden, where we would just walk around together and you wouldn't have to worry about being naked and shameful and vulnerable and filled with sin. And that's the kind of reality that Jesus is inviting us into, that we would have that same kind of reality that Adam and Eve initially had in the garden, that we could actually walk around with him. We could walk around with the God of the universe and we wouldn't be thinking about our junk. We would just be thinking about how amazing God is. And that's possible because of Jesus. Now, the truth is, you and I, we get caught up in making gods up in our own head. Like, we love to think who God is. We create a god in our own head, and we do this because we think, well, if somebody did this to me, here's how I would treat them, or here's how I deserve to be treated. And so we project that onto God. That's actually not all bad. That thinking is not all bad. And what I mean by that is, if you can continually be in that mind, that mindset of, this is how I deserve to be treated because of my brokenness, you can actually take that thought and it can very easily lead to worship. And what I mean is, like, when I think to myself, when I get in these ruts where I'm like, I am wretched, like I'm a sinful guy. I'm not the guy that maybe everyone else wants me to be or thinks I am or whatever. Like, I've got junk and I've got sin and I'm broken and I deserve bad. Like, I deserve God to be mad at me. That is all true. That's all, every part of that is true. And to think those things is not wrong. It's actually matter of fact. Like, those things are just true. I do deserve God's wrath and his anger, and I should be hiding in my sin and in my vulnerable place, and I should be hiding in my guilt like Adam and Eve hid, because I am broken and messed up. But that's like the start of the good news of the gospel. That's where Jesus would say, you don't have to hide anymore. The whole reason I died on the cross for you is so that you don't have to hide anymore. And Jesus would say to you and I the same thing that he said to all those people. He wouldn't say, all right, let's figure out how to get your behavior changed. We just really need to get you to act better, to behave all these things. I mean, that's what the Jewish people did way back in the day, back in the Old Testament. They were just following all these laws and making up new laws to make themselves look clean. And we have all kinds of Christian people today who are creating all kinds of rules and legalism and law so that you can look clean, so that you can look like you've got all your crap together and look religious or show up as the happy family or the good dude on Sunday morning. But that's actually really, really far from the gospel. The gospel begins when you say, every day I am broken and I am in need of grace. I am in desperate need of God's mercy. And then you can rejoice when you remember, oh yeah, God did pay a price that I deserved. He put my shame on himself. And God, Jesus would say to us, like, just come. Come and be with me. I mean, I think about Peter in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, at the end of Jesus' ministry. Peter had denied, one of Jesus' closest disciples. He was part of his like inner three deepest friendships. And Peter, on the night Jesus was betrayed, he denied even knowing Jesus three times. Three times he denied even knowing Jesus, his best friend, right? This is the fruit of Jesus's ministry. He pours into a guy for 3 years, and the guy, on the night he's being arrested, he says, I don't even know who he is, right? And then Jesus goes on to die on a cross and comes back, and Jesus and Peter's out fishing, and Jesus looks at him and he says, Peter, come have breakfast. Peter jumps out of his fishing boat and he runs to shore. He like swims to shore fully clothed to go have breakfast with Jesus. And that's because Jesus, he knew something about Jesus. He knew that Jesus was a guy that would forgive people, that wanted to be near sinners. And so that's my encouragement to you guys. Like, for those of you that are dealing with shame and brokenness and guilt, my encouragement to you would be, stop making up a God in your head. The God in your head would say, oh yeah, he's probably mad at me. He probably wants me to really change my behavior. He probably really wants me to get my act together. And then once I do, I can come to him. But instead of that, Jesus would say, I've taken care of it all for you. You can come out from hiding now. You don't have to hide anymore because I've made a way. Come have breakfast with me. Come be near me. Come follow me. Jesus has a reputation that is much different than what we give him most times. Most often we have a God who's mad, who wants to just like punish us, who doesn't want to be near us. But that's not actually the reputation of the God of the Bible. And so that's my encouragement to you brothers and for you sisters that listen to the Dad Tired Podcast. Let Jesus be Jesus. Let's not make him up in our head. Let's rest in the fact that God's grace is good, that it's new this morning, that God is not thinking about your sin as much as you are because of what Jesus did on the cross. Would we not dwell as much on our junk as we do on the good news of Jesus? Jesus's grace is only amazing when we realize how broken and messed up we are. And listen, this is not to say that we push our junk under the rug, because I think we all need to continue to press in, but we can press in knowing that there's grace, that our value isn't based on what we do or don't do anymore. So there just doesn't need to be any shame. God knows the junk I've done, that I'm going to do, that I'm doing right now. Like, God knows all of that. And he said his judgment towards me, his relationship towards me is not affected by it because of what he did on the cross. You're loved, brothers. You and I are loved, not because of what we've done, but because of who Jesus is and what he's done for us. So I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Come join us on the Dad Tired community if you're not there already. And if you know someone that's looking for some speakers, I'd love to be considered. I love you guys. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later.